I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 8th of September. Monday at 1 means all things political. And our guest this hour is Lisa Mascaro from the Los Angeles Times. We have a lot to talk about. The president is going to be giving an address to the nation this coming Wednesday, making his case for launching what some press reports today are calling a three-year plan, a U.S.-led offensive against ISIS militants who have been gaining ground in the Middle East. On Meet the Press, he said, "What I want people to understand is that over the course of months, we are going to be able to not just blunt the momentum of the militants, we are going to systematically degrade their capabilities, we're going to shrink the territory that they control, and ultimately, we are going to defeat them." We'll ask Lisa for her response to that statement by the president. The president decided a couple days ago that he will not act on immigration reform before the election. Why did he choose not to do that? There's a budget fight. Congress has to pass legislation once again to fund the government in the upcoming fiscal year by September 30th, when the current law expires. And we'll also look at some interesting races, Senate races. Lisa writes recently that the Republicans are increasingly favored to net 6 seats to gain control of the Senate. Why are they favored, and what races look as though they may not fall as people had thought a little while ago that they would? She has written an interesting piece on what was a three-way race in Kansas, but there's a chance that there could be Republican going down to defeat in Kansas. We'll talk about that race and others. Lisa covers Congress, writes about U.S. policy, economics, and political culture for the Los Angeles Times. She's an economics and political science graduate of UC Santa Barbara and also studied in Budapest, Hungary. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks so much for having me back.
Great to have you here. Well, let's look at what the president may be saying this coming Wednesday when it comes to a plan for defeating these barbaric ISIS forces. It wasn't all that long ago he said we don't have a strategy yet. He certainly has put one together, and it looks, I don't know what reports you're getting, that this is a really long-term strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, White House Press Secretary Jay Earnest is briefing reporters at the White House right now, as I'm sure some of your listeners might watch on C-SPAN or elsewhere. And we're all sort of chasing these reports down this afternoon that this could be a multi-year strategy. I'm up here on Capitol Hill, and Congress is the lawmakers are trickling their way back in for some votes this evening, and this is certainly going to be, you know, the talk of what was supposed to be just a sort of quick 2-week no drama session here in Washington that now is definitely going to be consumed by this coming speech and what Obama is going to be asking Congress to support him on.
Do you know if at the NATO meeting he was able to muster a significant international coalition? I'm reading this is a U.S.-led mission, and then I'm reading that maybe there are going to be some core members of this coalition. Do we know anything about that?
Yeah, you know, that's a little bit outside of my line of work here on the Hill, but I know that, you know, he was working hard, and that was some of the outcome of the NATO summit was to start, you know, beginning to build that international coalition. You saw some comments from the Arab League and over the weekend, and some of the work they were doing to try to gain support. So I think that is what is happening in the work in progress. And I think also, you know, that's going to be a lot of the questions that Congress is going to be asking, because American people, as I'm sure you know, are not thrilled about this concept of, you know, heightened military activity and don't want to see a go-it-alone posture by the United States by any stretch. And so having that sort of robust coalition, I think, is going to be something key to getting Congress on board here.
Do you think politically, Lisa, it was wise of him to say a couple of weeks ago, we don't have a strategy yet, or not? Was he just being honest?
Yeah, you know, I think those are some of those kind of comments that maybe folks say when they're trying to be sort of honest, but they don't understand that perhaps how flip that might sound and how difficult that might sound. And certainly here on Capitol Hill, that became a huge target for opponents of the president and even some of his backers who were sort of frustrated by the sense that, you know, there are a lot of problems around the world right now, a lot of hot spots, and this being, you know, one of the big ones. And the idea that there wasn't something fully formed yet was, I think, a little nerve-rattling to folks. Mm-hmm. You know, you see that consistently coming from Speaker Boehner and, you know, some of the others here on leaders on Capitol Hill, John McCain, Senator Lindsey Graham, saying, you know, show us a strategy and show us what you want, and then, you know, then Congress will see what it can get behind or what it would sort of reject.
The president announced a couple days ago he would not act on immigration before the election. I guess the question is whether or not action on immigration would hurt or help his party this fall, and, of course, your background information on why he decided to not take executive action.
Yeah, boy, that was a real twist. Again, talk about sort of changing tone. You know, on June 30th, the president came out very aggressively in the White House and said, look, Speaker Boehner has told me he is not going to be able to follow up on what the House, what the Senate did, and the House will not be able to take up immigration reform this year, so I will do it alone. And then, boy, you know, he flips around and says now that he's going to punt it until after the election. What happened was we counted, I think, a half a dozen Democratic senators who are up for re-election, which is really sort of the number of seats that Republicans need to take control of the Senate this summer or this fall. But this summer, the offices of those senators were really reaching out to the White House and saying that any move on executive action could hurt them in their races. A lot of the Senate seats that are most endangered this fall are those in the more conservative states, the southern states, Louisiana, Arkansas, North Carolina, and then the sort of more maverick state out of Alaska. Those were the senators that were sort of most raising the concerns. And, of course, the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the senator from Colorado, who does support action, but realized that it could, you know, was sort of conveying the concerns of the senators that he's trying to reelect. You know, the question's still really up for debate of whether punting this until after the election is going to help these senators win their reelection, because as we saw over the weekend, as soon as this was announced, the Republican opponents of these senators said, well, you know, now you've got to elect me because these senators are going to allow this to happen after the election. Mm-hmm. So anyway, to wrap up, sorry, I don't mean to talk so long.
No,
on that,
it's
but
fine.
It is sort of a, you know, one of those things that sort of darned if you do, darned if you don't, because it seems like it, you know, potentially would have been something had executive action been taken that might have stirred up both sides, both the conservative base to oppose these Democratic senators, but perhaps the progressive and liberal base and the minority voters to support those senators. So I'm not sure, you know, how that's really going to help or hurt those mm-hmm. senators.
Well, you quote Representative Gutierrez in the L.A. Times saying, and this is an interesting point, he says that the White House should do immigration before the election for transparency to voters, saying, let's not be afraid of standing for our values. Whatever happened to that, standing for your values?
Yeah, absolutely. And those advocates, Representative Gutierrez and other longtime active advocates of immigration reform, say, look, you know, the president came out in 2012, right before his own reelection, and made a stand for the so-called Dreamers, these young people who were brought to the country as children under illegal circumstances, but have grown up here. And he granted that program that allowed them sort of temporary reprieve where they could be legal for a couple of years, sign up for a program where they could apply for driver's licenses and work permits to get these young adults sort of out of the shadows and on their way. And that reaped rewards for the immigrant community who is trying to get out of the shadows for the president and his party, you know, in the election. So there is a case to be made that the president should do this now because it sort of looks potentially, I don't know, weak or, you know, like the congressman said, you know, not transparent to do it after the election. You know, I think the White House just calculated that that doesn't really matter, and probably what's important is to sort of, you know, do what they can to get the policy right, because it is, the White House says, a complicated policy as it looks to do an additional executive action, and so get something right that could be sustained, and then to do it when, you know, they think they could have the most buy-in support, you know, from Congress and not jeopardize their incumbent's right for re-election.
Yesterday, you wrote in analysis, with the shutdown deadline looming, five things to watch as Congress returns. And one, of course, is passing legislation to fund the government beyond the fiscal year on September 30th, the plan to approve 10 weeks of temporary funding. So is this going to be a problem again?
Yeah, question of the hour, right? There was a big sense last week when I was writing that, that there would be no drama. You know, lawmakers are not thrilled to be here for these 2 weeks. They'd rather be out on the campaign trail in what is going to be a very tight midterm election. So let's do the business of government and move on. Republicans are certainly aware that they walked away from last fall's government shutdown bruised. The Republican Party, though Congress has very low approval ratings, you know, sort of single-digit level among Americans, Republicans took more of the blame of the government shutdown last year. They were seen as sort of the provocateurs and the ones who sort of got blamed for it. And Speaker Boehner had this conference call with his members last week, and the message was sort of, you know, let's tamp it down and let's keep our heads down, get our work done, don't get into trouble. You know, the election is on the Republican side right now. Republicans have the wind at their back as they try to are almost all but certain to maintain, if not grow, their majority in the House, and could potentially flip the Senate to Republican control, which would give a Republican Congress for the first time in quite a long time. And I think Speaker Boehner's counsel to lawmakers was, you know, let's not jeopardize that. And you've seen from a number of sort of Republicans that they are buying into that. They don't want to be seen as sort of rocking the boat right now. That said, two things could complicate that. One, there is still the outstanding issue of the migrant children on the border, and there is some funding issues around that, where the administration needs to congressional approval for, it's not for new money to handle the kids at the border, but it's sort of accelerating the rate at which the administration is allowed to spend that money. People might remember there were some 70,000 unaccompanied minors from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, who came over. That did slow during the summer months, but people expect it to spike back up again in the fall as the warm weather cools and migrants fleeing conditions or seeking a better life in the United States come north. And it costs money to process them, turn some of them back, send them on flights home, or those who have potential claims, you know, allow them to stay so until their cases can be adjudicated. So it's a very complicated, costly matter. Anyway, that is one issue that is outstanding, and Republicans are very animated about stopping the crisis at the border and not sort of using that as a way to allow more immigrants into the country who maybe shouldn't be here. So that is something that could gum up the simple passage of the spending bill. And then also back to the initial conversation about Iraq and ISIS and Syria, if the administration needs any supplemental funding to do what the president will be talking about later this week, right now there is no request pending, and there is very little time for Congress to consider a request. However, this action and what it means, and if there would be any money involved, or just the debate itself could become part of this spending debate, and that those are things that could sort of jeopardize quick and easy passage. Just lastly, the government funding for the government ends with the end of the fiscal year on September 30th, so they would need to pass. Congress would need to get something approved by then, so August 1st, the start of the new fiscal year. But Congress is only scheduled to be here for 2 weeks, and so, you know, this is why the crunch time is
right. Well, you've brought up a number of follow-up questions for me. Number one, why is the wind at the Republicans' back right now?
Yeah, it's really a couple of things. One is mechanics and one is mood. The president's approval ratings are low, very low, and party in power always tends to historically suffer in midterm elections. The president's party, sort of, if you look back through history, it's a way, it's a sort of good old checks and balance on our government. And so Democrats are expected to sort of suffer because of the president's low approval rating. And I can tell you from the travels I've done to the different Senate states, for especially these southern states where the incumbents are holding on, you know, these are fairly conservative states where these Democratic senators, have been able to have their own brands. You know, Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, Mark Pryor in Arkansas. These are sort of dynasty family names that go deeply and broadly in these states. And these senators have made names for themselves and have been able to win in increasingly, you know, conservative states, red states. But with the president's low approval ratings, you know, again, the sort of conversations I've had with voters, thinking back to Arkansas visit I had, you know, where the candidates are just really suffering from the president's approval ratings. And that all stems back to, you know, passage of the health care law, passage of the finance reform law, some of these sort of big ticket items that the Obama administration is known for have not always been popular in these conservative states. And then just on the mechanics of it, there are so many more Democratic seats. I think 24 Democratic Senate seats. I can't remember off the top of my head, two dozen for re-election this year, and so fewer Republican Senate seats. And so Democrats are playing defense in most states except for a couple. Down in Georgia, there's an open seat, and, of course, the contested seat in Kentucky, where Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, is trying to win re-election. And the Democrats are only playing offense in a couple of Senate seats, but they're playing defense on many more. And then just real quickly onto the House, you know, the shifts in the House, it's going to be really hard for Democrats to sort of ever win back the House in the near future. Redistricting that happens every year after the census carved out new districts in the House that are much more partisan, which means you know, Democrats represent Democratic districts, Republicans represent Republican districts, and there's just very few seats that are sort of those traditional, you know, kind of toss-up seats, and that just doesn't leave much room for Democratic gains this time in the House. I think most pundits or handicappers would say something about, you know, six seats, maybe eight seats the House Republicans will add to their majority, strengthening the Republican majority in the House.
Lisa Mascaro is our guest, and you're listening to All Things Political. I want her to give us a follow-up eventually on the number of migrant children who are in detention along the border right now, and also whether or not what the president will propose on Wednesday will require some kind of congressional authorization or not. So join our conversation, won't you? We're getting little hints at what the president is likely to talk about when he addresses the nation on Wednesday of this week. He's going to be talking about a long-term plan to try and wipe out ISIS. Similar, he said, to the kinds of counterterrorism campaigns we've been engaging in consistently over the last five, six, 7 years. So what do you think about that from what you've read about what his plans are? Are you in favor? Do you think this needs to be wiped out and we should be leading a coalition to do just that and do whatever it takes? Was it wise for the president to decide that he would not act on immigration reform before the election? From Lisa's analysis, of course, because he's worried about Democratic Senate seats and conservative seats and could be accused by the Republicans of overreach if he decided to use executive action. The budget, do you anticipate that there are going to be any kinds of big battles over this, or have Republicans learned their lesson because they were blamed for the shutdown last year? Will legislation to fund the government by September 30th just move along very easily? and whatever else you'd like to talk about. We'd love to have you join our conversation. Our phone number for you to join All Things Political is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And what about the makeup of the House and the Senate? Wisdom is that the Republicans will pick up seats and turn the Senate Republican. Do you agree with what political analysts are believing will happen? And what do you think that will mean for the future of governance in this country? What about the president's approval ratings? Is he beginning to be coming forward with a strong stand on how we fight ISIS now? But then again, why did he decide not to take up the issue of immigration? We're going to go to you in just one moment. Lisa Mascaro from the LA Times covers Congress, writes about U.S. policy, economics, and political culture. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's welcome your phone calls once again for Lisa Mascaro from the LA Times. Our number is 800-486-8655 is our number, and we still have a couple lines open. We start with Carl in Madison. Hi, Carl.
Howdy.
Hi.
It seems as though as short a time ago as about a month ago, I was hearing a lot of reports that Boehner was holding legislation, immigration reform legislation, from coming to the floor because he was afraid that it would pass, easily pass. And this seems to confuse me because if that's the case, it seems like there's a lot of support for it. And I don't understand why he doesn't go forward with it. I mean, or why the Democratic candidates that are concerned for their seat would be that concerned.
Lisa.
Yeah, really good question, right? So, yes, there is a very popular Senate bill that is sitting over in the House that Speaker Boehner has declined to bring up for a vote. And by most analysis, that bill would pass. It's a very comprehensive approach to immigration reform. It had a bipartisan vote in the Senate and would probably get a similar bipartisan vote in the House. The problem is it would be a more heavily Democratic vote than a Republican vote, and it would deeply divide the Republican Party. And that's a key reason why Speaker Boehner won't bring it up, and also because the Republicans would prefer to have a different bill. The problem is the House Republicans have been unable to produce their own bill and their own sort of outline for reform. And that's been sort of a big criticism of the House Republicans, is that they are unable to coalesce around their own plan, yet at the same time they're sort of, dismissing this other plan that the Senate already was able to get through after a lot of painstaking negotiations over there in the Senate. That said, support for some of the key aspects of immigration reform dipped this summer during the crisis on the border with the migrant children, and that seems to be really one of the crucial moments when as President Obama and the Democratic senators appeared to backtrack a bit and pull away from their support for doing the reform, for taking action before the election, because the number of kids coming over the border left people, the American people, concerned that the border wasn't secure enough and that the U.S. wasn't able to sort of stop this problem. It did lessen support. You can see it in the polling. I wish I had those numbers in front of me, but I don't. But you can see it in the polling where some of the key aspects of immigration reform, allowing those who are here illegally a sort of 10-year pass to become citizens, if they learn English, pay fines, fees, taxes, show that they're working, so they could become basically legal in 10 years and then apply for citizenship in another 3 years. that was sort of the approach that the Senate bill had taken and that had been out there. And support for that waned during that crisis, and I think that's what really, leading up to the election, got people sort of to push away from it.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Carl?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. And what about all those children? Where are they now, Lisa?
Boy, yeah, that's a good question. Many of them are being are sent to family and relatives here in the United States. They have contacts here in the United States. Some are being sent back to their home countries. It's a lot of different cases. It depends, you know, on what happens when they come to the border. There is a law that says that they are able to have a hearing before an officer of the court to sort of determine whether they could stay, but often those hearings take a very long time, a year. So they are often housed. And so you see stories all over the country of these youngsters being placed with families and relatives as they sort of await their fate. It's a very complicated, you know, situation. There's been a big crackdown, we had a story in the LA Times on Sunday by our correspondent down in Mexico talking about Mexican authorities really trying to stop the Central American kids who ride, you know, this train, you know, it's called the Beast, and they ride this train up north, you know, on top of the train, and,
yes,
you know, we've seen all these pictures. But the Mexican authorities, under pressure from the United States, have been really trying to, within their own country of Mexico, turn back these kids before they get to the border. But, you know, what you're seeing on the border, too, is that the Border Patrol agents are being, you know, put in the role of sort of, you know, temporary caregivers for these kids, because a lot of the kids, they show up and they essentially turn themselves into Border Patrol and say, I'm here, I'm escaping my country, you know, and they are looking for, placement here in the United States. And so they have to, Border Patrol houses them temporarily until they can either get put with these nonprofit organizations that the, church organizations groups that are being contracted by the government to house these young people until they get their court date. Or they're being put with families. And then some of them who, that they don't have standing are just being put back on planes and sent home.
Mm, yeah. Our phone number, if you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655. And this is All Things Political this hour. And joining us is Lisa Massaro. Lisa is from the Los Angeles Times, congressional reporter for the Times. Mary in Round Lake, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Lisa, your opening comments were beautiful, succinct, and very informative. I have two questions. One, I don't know about the Science Reform Act. Shame on me. Can you clarify a little bit more what that bill was about? And secondly, you mentioned redistricting as a result of the census that takes place every 10 years. Is that the only way in which the redistricting comes about? And why do we see so many local fights in response to that, trying to block the redistricting or shift it? Can you explain those two a little bit more thoroughly?
Thank you, Mary.
First, and then I'll ask you to repeat what that first one. I didn't hear what the legislation was you were asking about. But on redistricting, right, every 10 years, when the census gives out when the census produces the new numbers for where folks are living, it's an opportunity for usually state legislatures is how it's done, to redraw the maps and divide up the congressional districts in a way that's equitable for the population within the state. And you will see across the states different ways of doing this. In California, for example, sort of, you know, as they say, you know, as California goes, there goes the nation. But California took this very innovative approach where they tried to depoliticize the decision, because it often becomes a political tug of war in state capitals across the country as whatever party's in charge is trying to redistrict their state in a way that benefits, you know, that party. California did a thing where they put it in the hands of a citizens commission, a sort of bipartisan, you know, commission of, citizens, active sort of civic people up and down the state to come up with a plan. And that's where you have this very interesting situation in California with the way the lines are drawn and then the way the primaries are held. In other states, it often becomes very political, and as we saw this last time, it really did just sort of shift the population around in a way that many people say sort of favored Republicans, really strengthening their districts. It's not that they gained so many districts, but they shored up those districts that may have been more of the kind of topsy-turvy districts, you know, between, you know, one year they're Republican, next year they're Democrat. So that's essentially how that happens, and it won't happen again until 2020, and then we'll have new results for the 2022 election. Boy, that sounds like a long way
off. It sure does.
So that's going. And I'm sorry, Mary, I didn't get that.
She asked about I don't know anything about this either, the Science Reform Act.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do not know about that either. I could certainly look it up. You know, there's something about like 10,000 bills introduced in a two-year congressional session, and I just don't know that one off the top of my head, but that doesn't mean it's not
right.
Important. I'm trying to see if we've got anything on it real quick.
Yeah, but, KP is looking it up, too. I don't know anything about it, and Mary doesn't either, so nobody of the three of us, we don't know what it is, but we're soon to find out.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Mary, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Nobody wants to talk about the president's address. Do you think that the president should seek and must seek congressional authorization for what he is going to be planning and announcing to the American public this Wednesday? We don't know what time, but the White House is saying that destroying ISIS may take 3 years, and he will in all likelihood announce a phased campaign against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. First phase, air campaign, it's already started. Also, the second phase to begin sometime after Iraq forms a more inclusive government, expected to involve efforts to train, advise, or equip the Iraqi military, which may take some doing, Kurdish fighters, and possible members of the Sunni tribes. And then the final part, which would take place after he is no longer president, would be to destroy ISIS in its sanctuary inside of Syria. So what do you think about that? Do you think that the president has taken some action here and this is good? Do you expect a congressional debate about this? Should we be confronting this? Should we be leading a coalition for this budget fight? Do you imagine there will be a budget fight? The Congress is just in session for a short time now, but their primary objective is to fund the government in the upcoming fiscal year by September 30th. Lisa outlined where that could be problematic with migrant children on the border and also authorizing action against ISIS. So, and the immigration, the president saying, not going to deal with this until after the election, obviously feeling that it would be a political liability to Democrats who are running. And the Senate, do you think the Senate's going to switch to Republican? And would that be a good thing or would it be a bad thing? Here is how you reach us. Lines are open. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter, @KDunnShow, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All things political right now, 800-486-8655 is our number, and we have lines open for you. We go to Daniel in Wilton, Wisconsin. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I heard you say that Obama's planning on making the third stage of his addressing of ISIS, the wiping out of their bases in Syria. What I can't understand, just on a logical basis, is why he would put the first thing last when really he should be going after them, you know, at the get-go.
He probably doesn't have a whole lot of support for it, don't you think, Daniel, that the international coalition isn't ready to make that step yet?
Well, that's really the job of being a leader of the free world, is not just to pay attention to what the international world is saying, but rather to see over the horizon and see what the long-term vision is. And go out and do it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about whatever he announces on Wednesday? Do you think that he should ask and needs to ask Congress for authorization for a plan?
Well, I'm not sure on the political side if technically he's required to. It could be that in terms of just the way things look and the way the American people want to, you know, rally behind this, that might be the wise thing to do. I think morally speaking, though, I think he has the backing of the American people and of the world. Because if this ISIS is out there slaughtering innocent civilians, you know, raping and butchering and so forth, then the leader of the free world should be getting out there and saying, hey, enough, I'm going to stand up and put my hand up and use the power that I've been given and say to the ISIS, you know, no more, I'm stopping you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Daniel, very much for the call. And I know this is outside your area, but you're in tune enough with all the political happenings that... let's get an assessment of where the American people are on this issue. Obviously, these news reports, Lisa, are horrendous to see. This is one awful, awful group. And yet, Iraq didn't go very well for us, and Afghanistan doesn't seem to be going very well for us. And the American people are, I don't know. I think that there's mixed opinion about whether or not we should really take on this organization, don't you?
I think that's exactly right. And I can tell you here in Congress, this is a Congress that is extremely divided on this question. You will hear lawmakers, and you have heard lawmakers all summer, on both sides, you know, criticizing the president, supporting the president, but having a lot to say about what should happen, you know, after the beheadings of the American journalists, after the attacks of the ethnic minorities in Iraq. You know, there was a lot of commentary coming out from the members of Congress. That should not be taken as a unanimity on anything. Republicans and Democrats are very divided in a very interesting way. First, there is the overwhelming sort of exhaustion with war and the costs of war that are still felt very, very much here in Washington. Both the, you know, on the, you know, the, of course, the rising of the national debt, and just, you know, it's been more than a decade, the longest war in U.S. history. Congress, you know, has the authority or is supposed to give the president authority to gauge war under the War Powers Act, yet Congress has been very, very hesitant to exercise that authority. It doesn't want that responsibility. And you see it in the statements and the comments that are being made. There is a sort of coalition of more liberal Democrats and more isolationist libertarians who are not interested in a full-scale engagement. And then you have the sort of hawks, defense hawks, sort of traditional defense hawks, Lindsey Graham, Senator McCain, who believe the United States should be going full bore on a, not boots on the ground, but, you know, a much more aggressive strategy than the president has been giving. And that's why it's been very difficult for the administration to sort of take steps, knowing that at some point it may, or, you know, it may bump into the need to ask Congress for greater authority. Many say in Congress say that the president has enough authority to continue taking these kinds of actions that he's taking without approval, further authorization from Congress. They say he has enough authority as commander in chief to just go do what he wants to do. That's also a way for Congress just to sort of not take the responsibility for it. You know, a very political decision to take with, you know, just weeks out before the election.
Yeah. Thank you, Daniel, very much for your call. Rick in Elkhart Lake is next. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question for your guest. She follows politics much more closely than I do. But I'm wondering if she has found any politicians, or if there's any number of them, that actually put the good of the country ahead of their own political party or their being reelected. For example, President Obama now is going to delay the immigration question until after the election for political reasons. I remember Mitch McConnell saying his number one job when Obama got elected was that Obama not get reelected. We see pure obstructionism on the part of Republicans against any idea that Obama comes out with. So I'm just wondering if she sees it differently than what I suspect a lot of other Americans do.
Thank you, Rick, for the call. Lisa?
Well, you know, it's a hard question to assign, you know, sort of motive to people and what they're doing. But I will say, I haven't been here that long, but I've been here long enough to know that, you know,
people do talk of a different era in Washington. And, you know, you read the books of the leaders that have come before and the members of Congress that have come before, and there was an ability to work together in a much more bipartisan way. And the country has become more partisan, and the Congress has become more partisan. Some of that is, what people choose to sort of live, who they choose to engage in, what they choose to read, how they get their information. Lots of factors going into the sort of polarization of the country, the political polarization of the country, and Congress is extremely reflective of that. And it becomes a bit of a sort of rhetorical arms race, if you will, where, one side is blocking the other from doing something, the other side retaliates, and, it's been going on for such a number of years now, particularly heightened since the Obama presidency, that it's hard to sort of go back and remember how it all started. You know, where did this all begin, and how did it get to this mess that it's in? It takes a lot for people to run for Congress. I know people like to sort of think of the fat cat politicians, but there is a bit of grueling work to it. They work long hours here, and they, have to fly back home across the country, many of them, every week to keep in touch with their districts. Not to say that they don't have their perks and, the sort of, personal sort of, maybe fame or whatever it is that goes with being a member of Congress, but there is hard work to it. So I think many of them are working hard, though I do think it's just a really difficult time to be trying to build bridges here in Congress.
Thanks, Rick, very much for your call. What is this you mentioned in one of the recent pieces you wrote? Speaker Boehner plans a pre-election economic address on September 18. What's that all about?
Yeah, boy, I was thinking about that the other day, I guess Sunday. I was thinking about that. It was supposed to be sort of a bit of a game changer for Republicans. It was a chance for the Republicans to step out in the sort of final weeks before the election and sort of say what they're for on these pocketbook issues that really, I think, are some of the issues that most Americans care about. We've just come out of a very horrible, great recession that people are still reeling from in so many ways. And this was a chance for Speaker Boehner to sort of put forward a proposal, a statement of where the party stands on these issues, and not just be the party of no and the party that's trying to repeal Obamacare or fight the president, of hell no party that the speaker's become. I would just say that it seems that might take a little bit of a back burner now with events around the world just again sort of taking dominant.
No. Kenneth in Janesville. Hi.
Hello. We're currently in the same situation that we were in after World War I. And last time the Republicans in the 20s brought us World War II because President Obama is going to have to decide how we're going to deal with the Muslims after they've overthrew these governments that were imposed on them after we imposed the Western model on them, and now they want their own model, and we're going to have to decide how do we deal with the billion Muslims. And I hope we do a better job than we did last time. I mean, after World War I, in dealing with them. And that's what we're at. I mean, the president is going to be at war with a billion Muslims, or maybe not.
Well, yeah, I'll just jump in and say if you want that. I mean, I think nation building is always a sort of very difficult proposition, right? I mean, the United States tried to go in to Afghanistan and to Iraq and really, help sort of bring about some transitions there with those civic societies, and we see how difficult that is. And you see even in Egypt, what happened after the Arab Spring with the differences that the party in power has with the United States, and those are always just very, very difficult parts of the foreign policy puzzle.
What amazes me, and you see this in Washington more than we would see it here, is that we have spent heavens knows how much money, but billions of dollars, and we built all these buildings for counterterrorism, and we've been at this for a long, long time. And Thursday is the anniversary of September 11th, 2001, some years ago now. And yet these waves of incredible viciousness and horrible killings just have emerged. And you thought you had the problem taken care of. I just don't quite get it. Do you, Lisa? Where is all the money going? Or is it just being incompetently done?
Yeah, boy, that's a really big question, right? I mean, I know there are investigative reporters fast at work on all these stories constantly, right? The spending of, you know, I mean, we created an entire new department after 9/11,
right.
The Department of Homeland Security, you know, and consolidated intelligence agencies and all of this work that has been going on. I mean, it's just, you know, I guess the best I can say is it's a very complicated, dangerous world and continues to be that
it
way.
It sure does.
I think, obviously, there are power struggles and disenfranchised people around the world who, you know, are struggling for different ways of life, better ways of life that may at times be certainly at odds with the U.S. way of life, and you know that those are just continued challenges. I'm not sure what else to say on that. It was a costly. I mean, obviously, the Iraq War was a costly endeavor, and the campaigns in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think that's definitely not just the treasure, but the bloodshed of American lives. You know, the military troops that have been killed and severely injured. We saw that with the VA crisis this summer, just the enormous number of vets needing services with the aging of the, you know, the Vietnam population and returning vets from Iraq and Afghanistan who thankfully are surviving many of their wounds but now live difficult lives. You know, those all are pressures and results of you know, very difficult world.
Yeah. Thanks, Kenneth. Ruth in Altoona is our final caller. Hi, Ruth.
Yes. You know, I hear the comments about the unpopularity of Obama. I mean, two things. Health care is, like, the number one thing people talk about, and the need for health care and people who lose everything they have if they get sick or can't afford it. The other thing is, does America just have amnesia? I mean, don't we remember what happened with the finances of 2008 and the policies of the Bush administration that also took us to war over 9/11 against Iraqis who had nothing to do with 9/11? There wasn't Iraqi in the bunch. They were Saudis. So what? I just am perplexed that the Republicans would have the popularity they do. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. You want to respond, Lisa, or leave it at that?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I think, you know, politics are always cyclical, and, you know, there's always that sort of ebb and flow of who's in and who's out. And, you know, maybe this is a sort of more, again, polarized version of that. But I think, you know, we do see that throughout history, and this is a bit of that again.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ruth, so much for your call. Lisa, thank you for being with us. It's going to be an interesting few months ahead.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, our pleasure. Lisa Mascaro, our guest this hour. She is with the LA Times, covers Congress, writes about U.S. policy, economics, and political culture. All Things Political is something we always do Mondays at 1 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. For those of you who enjoy politics, Clarence Page is with us tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Clarence has a new book. It's just being released, Culture Warrior, Reflections on Race, Politics, and Social Change. It's selected columns from 1984 to 2014. He's been a regular for All Things Political and for a long, long time, and always is worth listening to. So Clarence will be with us tomorrow during our 2 o'clock hour. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, to KP as well for on-air production in Milwaukee.